The following programming is sponsored by Bishop Mary Enterprises, LLC. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of this station, its management, or Beasley Media Group.
Real. Real. Relaxed. Relaxed. But relevant. But relevant. She's an absolute professional with a homegirl feel. Welcome to the Bishop Mary Show with Bishop Mary Foy Palmer, where she will discuss both religious and secular topics with various guests from all walks of life. So thanks for tuning in to the Bishop Mary Show. And now, here's Bishop Mary.
And top of the morning to you. Good morning, good morning. It is a bright Monday morning here, the 1st of July. We're already in the 7th month of this year. Moving fast, but we're grateful to be alive. If you're driving, please do so safely. If you're home having some coffee, please tune in. I have a fabulous guest. We're going to be talking about a few things, and we're hoping that it will be a way to express the sentiment or even an idea, a thought, an opinion, or even better yet, just good information for you to know that you can share with others. We're going to begin right after this message. It's that season to take care of your fur that is taking care of you. I suggest you take it to Zen Men Furs, located at 2901 Atmore Wilson Boulevard in Pennsauken, New Jersey. Why? Because they have a climate-controlled storage space that will maintain your fur's longevity. It's gorgeous, beautiful, and make you look absolutely amazing for the next season. Take it from Bishop Mary. You can't be in better hands than with Stephanie Kane, who will meet all of your furrier needs and make sure that your fur is handled with care. So head on over to Zen Men Furs. Call for an appointment with Stephanie and you won't be disappointed. Don't delay. Call today. 856-663-5600. 856-663-5600. 5600. She'd love to hear from you. And because I could not end Black Music History Month last month, thought I would start off with two familiar songs that you were hearing by two of course, Philadelphia's, well, one of Philadelphia's legends, the lady, the queen of R&B, Patti LaBelle, and then a familiar voice right after that. Stay tuned.
You might not say a word, but I see your tears when I show my pain.
The Tylenol I take when my head hurts. You're the sunshine on my life. love me, won't you say something? If you love me, won't you say something?
And there will be battles that I will have to fight. But victory or defeat, it's up to me to decide. But how can I expect to win if I never try? Never said I wouldn't fall. Never said that everything would go the way I wanted to go. But when my back is against the wall and I feel all hope is gone, I'll just lift my head up to the sky and say, help me to be strong.
A familiar song that many of us in the gospel world are familiar with by the powerful female duo Mary Mary. And that is my introduction to my morning guest today, Mr. Atif Bostic, who is the president and CEO of Uplift Solutions. Prior to that, you heard a little bit from Patti LaBelle, You Are My Friend, and of course, Usher, who did the Best Part remix. Congratulations to him on winning the 2024 Lifetime Achievement Award last evening on the BET Awards. So I wanted to round off Black Music History Month with a little R&B. Y'all know I'm a music chick. And a little bit of gospel, which introduced my guest, so that we could say that we are proud of our heritage. This month in June, we covered blues, jazz, classical, now R&B, and of course, my hit, the gospels. So always appreciate that, which is giving us inspiration and encouragement. And so thankfully, Mr. T. Bostic and his inordinately busy schedule chose to join me here for the first time here on the Bishop Mary Show. And we are hippopotamus happy he is here today. And we are grateful for his presence. As I said, he is the president and CEO of Uplift Solutions. So we're going to find out a little bit about him and then what is Uplift Solutions. And we might break out in a kind of a stirring conversation. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing well. Thank you. How are you?
I'm great. I'm great. So who is Atif Bostic? Inquiring minds want to know.
That's a great question. Atif Bostic is a father, a husband, a leader, someone that wants to solve problems, wants to help people, and just a caring individual. So that's, and obviously, from by way of title, president, CEO, but as far as the person, just really an empathetic person, an empathetic leader. That's how I see myself.
I do remember, I think I met you, moons ago. And I'm believing it was in the banking industry. I'm not sure exactly. But we were at a meeting, and I got a chance to see you then. Of course, you were young and spry, and I have aged, and so gray is now my color. Back then, I was a little, dark brown with the PYT thing going on. I'm a great grandma, so I'm proud of it, and I wear it with pride and courage. And of course, you folks want to know, do you hail from Philadelphia? If so, what school did you go to? And all of that good stuff, because Philly loves Philly.
No, that's right. That's right. And so, and that's obviously always the question, right? Because the school tells you, and particularly, you know, when you're outside of Philadelphia, and you can tell I'm from Philadelphia because you're referring to high school, because when you're outside of Philadelphia, you're talking about undergrad, right? You get anywhere outside, it's what college did you go to? But in Philadelphia, it's what high school did you go to? So I ended up going to two high schools, one in Philadelphia, one outside of Philadelphia.
Okay.
Engineering and science.
George Carver. Okay. E&S. All right.
George Washington Carver.
That's right. Yes.
And one of the best classes. So 96 was that class. I didn't finish there. I actually finished at Central Bucks High School East. So we moved way out to the suburbs.
Yeah, y'all did.
And finished school out there. But I will tell you, though, it gave me such a unique perspective on education. And just the city, right? Mm-hmm. And that actually helps to guide my work today. So,
that's good.
I'm appreciative of that.
Of that experience, naturally. And of course, did you go to college now? I guess I could say, are you one who went to one of our formidable universities and colleges that we have here in the city?
Oh, okay. There we go. All right. So, kind of. I'm a Nittany Lion, so Penn State.
Okay. We'll still claim you.
We are? Okay. Okay, that's all right. Okay. And actually, Bishop, I thought you were going to say, did I go to a HBCU? That's the question.
But you went to Penn State, and you know Philadelphia loves Penn State. So, you know, you're still in the cut.
Oh, that's right. Absolutely.
You know, you're still in the cut. We still claim you because it's here in the state.
That's right. And again, we have one of the biggest alumni networks, period, right? Like, hands down. So.
Absolutely. I like to think the same for Girls High. Our alumni association is extremely strong, so... When you get us mobilized, you get us going, boy, you're going to know we in the place. Girl power, all right, all day. We want to know, some people have already sent me some text messages. What is Uplift Solutions?
Okay, right.
Who are you? What do you do? And we'd love to hear about that, how it started and how you got involved.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So Uplift Solutions is a nonprofit organization here in Philadelphia. And Uplift Solutions currently focuses on reducing barriers for justice-involved individuals and at-risk youth, helping them find pathways to long-term success. Now, the organization didn't start that way. The organization was founded in 2009 by Jeff and Sandy Brown, and it was focused on eradicating food deserts. And then over time, with some of the changes, shifts in the environment and some other things, we started to look at what could we do to be very impactful for this region. And then obviously for the greater region and the country, and how we can make greater impact. And so we started to look at some of the things that we were already doing, which was workforce development for our clients when we do new supermarket development work. And we said, look, we could take that and actually apply it to justice impacted individuals, which are pretty much our most vulnerable citizens that we find because of all the barriers that they face. And we can start to reduce and remove some of those barriers for those individuals. And so we do a number of things within that to remove barriers. The first is we do workforce development, and we have an HVAC program, a CDL program, but more importantly, as we think about our programs and the work that we do, most people believe we're a workforce agency, which is actually a bit of a misnomer because our work is really rooted in behavioral change. Mm. So everyone that goes through our program goes through cognitive behavioral therapy, dialectical behavioral therapy, conflict resolution, problem solving. And then concurrent to that, we're also doing benefits navigation. So we're working with them on housing, childcare, healthcare, any other issue or barrier that they face. And then once we get them past that, then we actually train them to move into an HVAC career, CDL career. We have same day work and pay. We're working behind the walls. We do some retail work. as well. And then, you know, the other side of that, when we think about reducing barriers, is the advocacy work, is really working on those systemic issues and making sure that we are breaking down those issues as well.
Hmm. I do recall Uplift Solutions when it was working under the founders, Jeff and Sandy Brown, because we had issues with supermarkets and providing good foods, particularly in income impacted areas of the city. And as I chatted with Mr. Brown, he would say that his father had a store at 40th and Girard, and that was a whole nother dynamic back then. But he gave everybody a pass, and he would often, well, because his thing was, I want to make sure that people eat. And of course, you know, in our neighborhood, we all put slips in. If we didn't have it on Monday, we could put a slip in and bring our money on Friday to the neighborhood grocer. And so, realizing his background and his passion to ensure that people get good foods, I was happy about it. Then I met a young man who was telling me, I'm with Uplift Solutions and I'm one of their programs. I said, oh, are you going to be working at the supermarket? Are you being trained to be a leader? And he said, no, I'm doing HVAC because I want to get into unions. And I said, HVAC? Well, how did that happen? I said, maybe I missed the memo. And it piqued me because I knew his family and I knew that, you know, he had spent some time in the gated community and now was trying very, very hard with a brand new baby to get his life together. And so when I heard that, I said, man, I'm glad they're branching out. Now with Uplift Solutions, is it geared only for those who might have had some run in, shall we say, with the justice system?
Yeah, for our adult population, that is true. For our youth population, it's really at-risk youth. And so we do try to catch them before they get, you know, enter the criminal justice system. And if we don't, we still work with them if they do enter the criminal justice system. I do want to go back for a second because I do want to talk about something that's very important. Mm-hmm. And it's a key point of why we started to reduce the amount of individuals that we put into the retail stream versus HVAC, and why we started HVAC and CDL is because one of the things that we looked at, right, we have this school to prison pipeline,
yes,
which we're all aware of, and so our work initially, particularly with the adults, we don't impact the school to prison pipeline. With the youth, we try to impact that, but with the adults, we don't. And so then we need to, once they go to prison, unfortunately, then we need to move them from prison to productivity. Mm. Right. And so we need to get them productive. And that could be retail. However, what a major focus of ours is, and a major passion of mine, and we're going to start to get into it, I think, a little bit here, is that now I got you to productivity. Now I need to get you to prosperity. Because guess what? That, you know, when we talk about people that look like you or I, we get stuck in low income jobs for a long time and we can't move. We don't create economic mobility for ourselves or our families. And we need to change that, right? And we need to change that by the way of jobs we're going into, the way we train, what leaders are choosing to train on. And so that is a pet peeve of mine. And I have a very particular focus of going upstream with the employment. So that's why you hear HVAC, that's why you hear CDL and other jobs to come. We're working on acquiring another nonprofit, and we're going to offer personal fitness training. And then, you know, we're going to go into some additional trades as time goes on as well. So you'll see more and more from us actually going upstream, really moving from productivity to prosperity for individuals that come through our, you know, our programs.
I'm glad to hear, particularly the personal fitness, because the joke is, you know, they get to lift weights and walk around, and a lot of them get to stay in shape and really come out buffed up and all. And that is something that's not requiring, per se, you know, the degree based, if you're educated, per se, but mm-hmm. experience and training and going through a course that will help you to know how to be a personal trainer and or lead a class with those that really want to stay fit. And I'm grateful that you gave that explanation. One of our listeners is asking me if I have someone that needs to get into either of those, because we're talking about adult who recently, she says,
adult member of my family, recently returned home after 8 years, has been struggling because jobs are not making enough, $10, $12 an hour. And, you know, let me be, give the word that in the prison, you make 19 to 21 cents an hour. So a lot of us in our mind think, I mean, what are you upset about? Because, I mean, you know, $10, $12 an hour is a whole lot more than what you made in prison. Correct. However, $10, $12 an hour is not a livable wage when you have rent, food, utilities, you know, a cell phone, and then you have clothing, you have transportation. You know, you have those things that you want to be able to have left over for entertainment that do not cost you so much that you find us unorthodox, or shall we say, not so legal method of living in order to maintain what you're doing. When you are in prison, everything is taken care of. You don't have that overhead. So the little bit of money you make, you can send or stay or collect it till your time is up. And I think that when I talk to people, they're like, well, they get three hots and a cot, so what's the big deal? Well, if I could come out, live anywhere in a nice room with all the amenities and not have to pay any rent. Oops, did I say that? Because that sounds like a child who's allowed to live in their parents' home. Amen. But I'm going to leave that alone.
That's right.
You know, you ain't paying electric, gas. You get to stay in what you call your room, which was never a room of mine in my parents' home, because I didn't own nothing there. That was a privilege, not a right. And they made that perfectly clear. So when you're dealing with somebody who has been used to being taken care of, now having the responsibility, $10 to $12 doesn't quite cut it. Pennsylvania is still trying to move it up to, I believe the governor proposed $15, and hopefully raising our minimum wage, which is still deplorable, at $7.25. So how do you, as an organization, understanding what the minimum wage requirement is, make anyone that comes through your program see the long-term benefit? Because a lot of us want it right now.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. But it goes back to why I say that we're a misnomer, that, or us being a workforce agency is a misnomer. So individuals that come through our program spend 4 weeks with us going through what we call life skills. Okay. Life skills also includes financial literacy and all those other things. But it's really about mindset change. It's about making sure that you get your mind right and understand how to see the world. Because you're right that when individuals come back to us, when they come back to society, they see the world in a very particular way, in a very specific way. And interestingly enough, here's the other thing that I'll say, is even if you weren't incarcerated, but you live in some of the communities that you live in, you also have a certain mindset that you come to us with. And so we need to make sure that we work with you on that to be able to see the world differently. Now, the reality is, Bishop, that sometimes it does require you to take a first step job because you haven't worked, you haven't done, you don't have any skills, and we have to build on those and we have to build you up. And we try to do that very quickly. But when you come to us with skills, when you come with ability, when you come being able to do more, you shouldn't have to go and do that, right? And be relegated to that space. And so that's the idea, is really part of what we do is understanding when people come in, we triage them, kind of like it's a hospital or a doctor's office. And we understand what your background is, what your skills, experiences, you know, what do you come with us with? What do you come to us with? And then we start to figure out, well, where is the best place? Because you may come asking for one thing and we say, well, you know, you actually, you know, we see more in you than you see in yourself. And that's okay. Just trust us until you see it for yourself. And so we move people along. And I think that's important. And that was important for us to be able to diversify our programs, that we were able to be able to move people into the different roles that better suited them. The other thing that we pride ourselves on, which unfortunately a lot of other agencies don't do, is we'll send them somewhere else. If we're not the best organization suited for them, we're not going to try to put them in a program of ours. We'll send them down the road to OIC. We'll send them over to Jazz. We'll send them to the Urban League of Philadelphia. We'll send them where they need to be for the right for them, right? Because for us, it's really about serving the individual, not necessarily serving the need to get a number in the organization.
And of course, you know, nonprofits are challenged with budgets and income and making sure. So when you say that you can refer someone and you realize now that's going to eventually hit your bottom line on on your income coming in to generate the programs at full capacity to then be rewarded again. One person says, as a nonprofit, how do you maintain that if you're making referrals?
Yeah, so the reality is, Bishop, look, there is no shortage of people to help. And unfortunately, as nonprofits, right, we have this scarcity mindset that if I give something away, then I'm losing something. We started this program with waiting lists, right? And so we are not at a deficit of people to help in this city. You know, there are thousands of people that come back to the city of Philadelphia every year from incarceration. We're not serving thousands yet. I'm not saying we're not going to, but we're not serving thousands. We're serving hundreds, but we're not serving thousands. And so that leaves space for That's other right. organizations and to work collaboratively and collectively to be able to move the needle, because we all do different things. We all can, you know, look, you know, and I'm a business guy. You talked about it already, right? I come from banking. And one of the things when I talk to businesses, you know, and I say, well, who's your customer? And they say, everybody. Well, no, everybody's not your customer. And nonprofits also have to think that way, that everyone isn't your customer. Everyone isn't right for your services and you're not right for them. And you have to recognize and realize that. And I think, you know, once we start doing that, because when the referrals go back and forth, then really we built a true ecosystem of support once we get there. But of course, we're not there yet. And the other part, too, is I believe if I'm doing the right thing, if I'm driving the right results and the right solutions, the dollars will come. And so and that has been our reality, that we've grown year over year. As far as financial growth, we bring on new funders each year that support the program. And we are now at the point where we're white labeling our program. So this program is running outside of this state that are actually using our curriculum and our methods. And so, you know, I don't have a scarcity mindset.
And I'm glad that you said that, because as a founder of a nonprofit, of course, our bottom line is always funding. And then people are scared to give up the little bit that they got and try to stretch it more than it needs to be. But it's important for collaboration. And I'm glad to hear you say that y'all are not so intellectual property driven that you can't share, and the fear that somebody's going to duplicate it or take it. You know, at the end of the day, if my program is going to help your nephew, and your program is going to help my niece, then we're getting a family together and wholesome in a way that will benefit our community and our family in the long run. So I'm grateful that you said that. I hope, sweetheart, you heard that so that it will kind of take away the concern that I feel that you're trying to say in your question. We're going to continue with Mr. Atif Bostic shortly, and we want you to stay tuned right here on The Bishop Mary Show. But right now, we're going to break for one quick second. We love Philly sports, and I heard that there was a new one coming to the Sixers. Only one that can give us the update is, of course, Sports Talk Terry. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. I'm Sports Talk Terry, and I'm calling with your Philly Sports Minute. And yes, Bishop, you are correct. It has been a frenzy of moves for the Philadelphia 76ers as they kicked off free agency by not only re-signing Kelly Oubre to a two-year deal, bringing in veteran shooter Eric Gordon from the Clippers, but they went out and made the big splash and did, in the last 2 hours, sign Paul George, the nine-time All-Star, who defected from the L.A. Clippers late last night to a four-year, $212 million deal. He's expected to come in and be the third option on this team, and a huge upgrade over Tobias Harris. And when you add that with the picks of Jarrett McCain from the draft, as well as Adam Boma, as well as Philadelphia native from Imhotep, Justin Edwards, who they signed on a two-way deal at the end of the draft, the Sixers are filling out the roster very, very nicely. Also to note, the Philadelphia Phillies did lose both Bryce Harper and Kyle Schwarber to injury over the weekend, and were actually down 6-2 yesterday to the Florida Marlins, the Lily Marlins, but rallied back and ended up winning that game 7-6 and splitting that series, which also saw Christopher Sanchez, who had recently inked a four-year deal, throw a complete game shutout for the first time in his Major League career. So it's been a very exciting weekend in Philly sports as we continue to watch those two teams progress through the offseason and regular season. And lastly, the Philadelphia Eagles, nothing really new to report, although there have been reports that Jalen Hurts has done a better job of bonding with the team and the teammates. Recently, Devontae Smith had a softball all-star game and Jalen Hurts was present. He's been spending more time with guys, doing drills and camps, and doing things that leaders should do. So obviously the organization is happy with that progress, and we'll make sure that we keep tabs on that. We will definitely keep you posted on all things Philly sports. Make sure you guys check it out every Monday right here on the Bishop Murray Show, and you can find me on all social media platforms at Sports Talk Terry. Thank you.
Thank you, son. We appreciate you keeping us updated right here each week on the Bishop Murray Show. Get your sports updates for Philly sports. We are crazy about our sports. We're going to
real quick before I drop off.
Yeah.
Yeah, real quick before I drop off. I know that's good brother Atif Bostic. Atif, this is Everett, man. We were Cheney together. Good to hear from you, man.
Oh, man, it's good to hear from you as well.
Small world indeed. Have a great day.
It definitely is a small world. Oh, man, you too. Thank you for the update.
All right.
Excellent. We're going to continue our conversation with Mr. Atif Bostic right after this message. It's that season to take care of your fur that is taking care of you. I suggest you take it to Zen Men Furs, located at 2901 Atmore Wilson Boulevard in Pennsauken, New Jersey. Why? Because they have a climate-controlled storage space that will maintain your fur's longevity. It's gorgeous, beautiful, and make you look absolutely amazing for the next season. Take it from Bishop Mary. You can't be in better hands than with Stephanie Kane, who will meet all of your furrier needs and make sure that your fur is handled with care. So head on over to Zenman Furs. Call for an appointment with Stephanie, and you won't be disappointed. Don't delay. Call today. 856-663-5600. 856-663-5600. She'd love to hear from you. And we're back. This is Bishop Mary doing the Bishop Mary Show live in the studio of WWDB 860 AM. And I'm Hippopotamus, happy to have Mr. Atif Bostic, who is the president and CEO of Uplift Solutions. We spoke a little bit about the program. Yes, he's Philly made, y'all. I gave him nowhere. Amen. But he is still connected to us and very, very passionate. And I'll give you this comment. One lady said, I can hear your passion about justice impacted adults and youth. Thank you for your service. So we are grateful that what you are feeling is really coming through. Given everything now, I'm going to be able to talk about the next two subjects. The first being the One Philly vision that Mayor Sherelle Parker has envisioned for Philadelphia. You talked about some of the challenges, housing, folks being able to have a good livable wage, equal economic opportunities. Given that she has laid this out, the budget has now passed. We're hoping she won't veto anything in September when they resume, but this will now be going full throttle. How does her vision compare, contrast, and or collaborate with Uplift Solutions?
Yeah, it's funny that you mentioned that. It directly aligns to it. And so I will share that part of her vision and part of her 100-day plan was to create greater access to benefits and services for justice-impacted individuals, particularly in the communities. So it's how can we bring more things into the community so individuals don't have to go downtown? How can we improve probation and parole violations? And so part of that work in what she's doing, she introduced something in her plan called Neighborhood Resource Centers. And I'm excited to say that back last year, about a year ago, actually a little more than a year ago, we responded to an RFP to design neighborhood resource centers for the city of Philadelphia. And just about a year ago, we were awarded that RFP and have been working with the city for just about a year in designing neighborhood resource centers for the city of Philadelphia to be rolled out. Exciting news is that we also, at the same time, was opening our new location on Hunting Park which is now becoming the pilot, the first location for neighborhood resource centers directly aligned to her vision for this work. And so that's just one area of it. Another area is we have over 1,000 alumni. And so one of the things, when you look at our strategic priorities for our organization, is to use reentry work to transform Philadelphia. And so, and we talk about physically transform. So our alumni actually go out into the community and do community cleaning. So when we talk about cleaner, greener, that's the work that they're doing. We're leveraging our alumni network to do that. And basically what the idea is that they're going back into the communities that they, and they said this themselves, I'm using their language, that they tore up and destroyed, and they're rebuilding their own communities. And so that directly aligns with Mayor Parker's vision related to, you know, cleaner, greener, safer. And then obviously our recidivism rate is 2%, which means, you know, that individuals aren't going back and creating new crimes. So it directly aligns with all three of those statements that she has.
I'm glad to hear that. I have been a volunteer instructor at SCI Chester since it opened in 1998, and I'm doing a weekly class which incorporates the whole man, physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, and then, of course, economically. So I'm on the inside trying to get them to change their mind. My ministry is changing lives by changing mindsets. So if I can get your mind to do it, which is the leader, then everything else will follow. And hearing that helps me to know that with the recidivism rate, and I've taught, you know, over 2,000 guys over these 26 years, that my recidivism rate is very low for them to return, because I deal with them holistically. How to make sure you're healthy so you're not having to be taken care of by your family when you ain't been there so long. You know, mentally, are you challenging yourself? If you don't have your GED, you don't have any degree, please don't leave here with the access to that, and come in, leave the same way you came in. Emotionally, dealing with the trauma impacts in your life and being able to emotionally be balanced, knowing when and when not. And then, of course, spiritually, if you only have three tires on a car, car ain't going to go far. So whether you want to believe in a God or not a God, you know, you are able to do so. So hearing this holistically and recognizing everything that is involved, I'm glad to hear about the necessity of you having 1,000 alumni to come back into the neighborhood that you said they tore up and destroyed and are now able to come back with cleaner and greener. And the recidivism rate of 2% is extremely impressive, because it means that if I messed up, I've now corrected my mess up. And this way, our systems, our collaboration, forgiveness can now help in the healing and can continue for us to come back and do the good things that mostly people think we're never going to be good at. I'm so thrilled to hear that. Now, recognizing that it's directly aligned and you are trusted by the city, particularly with the Neighborhood Resource Center, certainly. Has that opened yet, or will be having an opening?
So we are open in the location, but we have not launched the Neighborhood Resource Center yet.
Okay.
Coming soon, probably in the next 30 days or so, but coming soon.
I would love to be there for that. Just to see it myself.
You will be. You're on the list.
Bless your heart. Bless your heart.
And here's the other thing I would say is I would love to get you to come out and see it even before. So you can get a tour of it, see
Absolutely.
What's going on there. I would love to get you out and just get into the space.
Well, you know, to holler at your girl, it ain't nothing but a phone call, amen. And I answer my phone. And if not, I do respond. And that's, everyone pretty much knows that. And I certainly would love to be able to make the announcement closer to the day of the launch so we can get the word out to the community and we can ensure that folks are aware of it. I would love for it to be full with people Perfect. That we can't even get them in, but that they are open and exposed to something that's going to be of a blessing and a benefit to them. Shifting the conversation a little bit with the One Philly Cleaner, Greener, Safer city, largest Class 1 city with economic opportunity for all, we are all very concerned about the voting. The voting last November for a Class 1 city with 1.2, I believe, registered voters seem to be less than just about 20-some percent. And that, of course, was our mayoral race. And the elected officials on the city, which impacts us faster and quicker than anything state or federal. Now we're in our presidential. And the apathy that I seem to keep hearing is, it's not going to affect me. It doesn't matter to me. And it's the biggest misnomer, because if you don't vote, you're not letting them know you need resources, which means more money is being sent another place. And let me just say this, that because our generation of mothers and grandmothers who traditionally voted, the super voters are the women. We're very, very concerned about men overall, but in particular, our Black men in this voting time. How can you share that in your view as a Black man, as a husband, father, leader, to express the need and the desire to appreciate the sacrifice that so many have done, allowing us the right to vote?
Yeah, it's, you know, and you and I talked about this a little bit already, right, when we think about that. And I would say that, you know, there's a number of things, particularly as we talk about Black men and voting and getting Black men to vote. And I think part of the challenge is that there's a feeling of disenfranchisement, that my vote doesn't count, it doesn't matter, you know, that if you think about the gentleman running for president now and having, you know, over 30 felons convicted of 30 felonies, that, you know, I go commit a misdemeanor and I can't get a job.
Right.
But yet someone with over 30 felonies can run for president. Right. So right. So that immediately disenfranchises a person to say, this what is this? What is this thing? I am not involved. I can't be involved in this thing. In a state called democracy. And then the other thing is, we've never had our own candidate, right? Because who am I connected to, right? I haven't seen anything change for me. And unfortunately, Black men have been disenfranchised. And I'm not going to say all, right? Because there are some that make it out and thrive and do all those things. But unfortunately, when we think about the masses, they run into these issues.
And by us not having our own candidate, how important do you think that is, particularly for men who are looking at, because, oh, I got a question. What someone is saying, well, we have one now in Kamala Harris. She's African-American. Yes. She's the first African-American and woman to serve as the vice president of the United States. We were thrilled for the 8 years of the reign of Barack Obama, who was the first African-American man to ever serve in the White House. I like to say we're Black folk built. Now, how are we going to try, or what is your process you think we would need to do to really kind of come up with our own candidate, as you put it, hoping that will be another way for us to feel valued, even though we are often dismissed.
So here's the first part, right? Let's define what I mean by our candidate, right? Because, you know, I think that comes from a question. Is this whole idea of we have a candidate because they look like us, but that doesn't mean they think like us. We don't know what their intentions are. We haven't set expectations, right? So when I talk about our candidate, this is someone that we selected based on what our intentions, our expectations are, and what our needs are, and that they're going to go champion that. And so the best way I can give an example of, or the best example I can give of this is Barack Obama. So Barack Obama gets in the office and we are extremely disappointed because he hasn't met our expectations. But here's the thing. And going back to, yes, we call him our candidate, but what really was he our candidate? Because we didn't set expectation when he went into office of what the things, right? So he had certain intentions of things he wanted to do, but we didn't set expectations for him as he was going into office. And here's what happens, right? Particularly when we think about other classes of people, they will identify who they want to run and what they want them to get done, and then run them and put them in office.
Facts.
We don't do that. Yeah. And we need to sit down and say, hey, Mrs., Mr., Miss, whomever, we're going to run you. And here's what we need you to do. And by the way, the other thing that happens is that on the other side of it, after that, that person gets taken care of. Right. That's what happens with other classes of people. Right. We don't do that.
I mean, we'll keep it real on your show.
Listen, this is who I am. We will talk about it.
Yeah. I recently was privileged to see an interview with our president, Barack Obama, and, you know, they showed the side-by-side clip, you know, when he came in, he had black hair and young babies and a gorgeous wife, and everybody was happy with him. By the time he started the second term, you know, it was a little salt and pepper up in there, and he went through a few things. By the time he came out, he is really, you know, on the gray side, and he said, toughest thing of his 8 years, and I'm paraphrasing here, not direct quote, was that when he started, everybody was excited. He had all the support. But by the time he got to a second term, he had sorely disappointed so many people, in particular his own race, who didn't feel as though he made the right choices or decisions corporately or collectively for our nation that would have made a benefit for us. And so he says, it's not till you're really in the seat that you have to have an agenda. You have to meet expectations, demands, needs, and still come out on the winning side. And I thought that was one of the most important things he could say because, you know, and I jokingly said this in my preaching for a pastor's anniversary, we always love the leader till we can blame the leader. And if things don't go right, and I was talking to a pastor, oh, we love you. You get all the gifts and installations, and we're just thrilled to get to have us a pastor. But if the congregation don't go and the money goes down and things start happening, well, it must be the pastor's fault, not recognizing that's not his assignment.
That's right. It's not his assignment.
His assignment is not to bring the people in, then make sure they stay there, and then make sure they tithe, and make sure they do. His assignment is to love, teach, and care for the people of God. And so unless we accept the assignment and understand what that encourages, we need to stop blaming the leaders. And I'm not saying there aren't some that need to be blamed. But in this conversation, I see it from that perspective that, you know, Barack said, listen, I tried to do everything for the whole and not the part. And we have to understand that I'm president of the whole United States. And he said that. Remember, I'm president for the whole United States, not just for a segment of it. Go ahead. I'm sorry. I saw you trying to.
That's right. No. Listen. And I appreciate you being your soapbox because I get excited about this as well and talking about this because there's two parts to that, right? And I just want to go back and just kind of define dissatisfaction. And because you can calculate dissatisfaction, you can figure that out. You can calculate satisfaction, you calculate dissatisfaction. And here's how you figure it out. Here's how you calculate it. It's the difference between expectation and experience. My expectations here, my experience is here. That's the level of dissatisfaction. And so the farther my experience is from my expectation, the greater the dissatisfaction. Or the higher my experience is from my expectation, the greater the satisfaction, right? So it's easy to calculate. And here's the problem, right? When we don't communicate expectation, when there's this assumption of expectation, I assume you're supposed to do this, then I'm going to be dissatisfied every time because my experience is not going to be what I expect. Now, here's what I'm going to say about Barack Obama, though, President Obama. I appreciate what he did because, number one, I didn't come in with the same expectations as others did. I understood that there were certain things he was not going to be able to do coming into office as a Black man. And I'm going to tell you that he got some of the biggest pieces of legislation through when we start talking about the Affordable Care Act.
Yes.
And some, right? Like, there were some major things that he got done that he would not have been able to get done if he came in militant. And those really move the needle for everyone.
Absolutely.
And particularly Black people.
Yes.
So,
I'm with you. I'm feeling you. And I wholeheartedly agree with you. I think that he laid the foundation that now our current president, Joe Biden, was able to even stand on and push the envelope a little further, getting the cost of insulin down to $35, you know, working on the student loans, things that he tried, at least making people aware. And particularly what I appreciated for was being the first president to ever go to a prison and understand the whole justice process and hearing from people there themselves. That opened up the door, I think, to some of the changing that we have made here in Pennsylvania with juvenile lifers, with, of course, adult lifers, with looking at legislation that penalizes over, you know, one, I'm going to say one tote of one piece of grass, you know, where you going away for 5 years because you smoked it and a cop walked by and smelled it. I mean, you know, helping us to be a little bit more open to the fact that there ought to be accountability and responsibility, but it does not always mean that we have to be punitively infected to the point that we can't continue to live.
No, that's absolutely right. But you said something important there that I just want to call out, because when we think about the First Step Act that happened in the Trump administration, which I got invited to the White House to actually talk about and help the shape. And yeah, I got that question when I got the email, you know, are you going? Of course I have to go, because if you have a seat, you only get effect change if you show up, right? So I have to show up to effect change.
Yes.
And so here's what I would say, though, because the work, and no one's going to admit this, but the work that President Obama did laid the foundation for the First Step Act in the Trump administration, but no one's going to talk about that. And so that was actually the foundation and the precursor for that work. So, you know.
Right. Not a lot of us are happy about 45. And, you know, of course, there's great debate about the next steps for the Democratic Party after last week's debate. And at the end of the day, we know one thing for sure and two for certain, that if that was any other candidate running with 34 felony convictions, it would not be happening. And most of us do believe that they would have to drop out. They would have to stop. And of course, the issue is, well, if he is removed from the ballot, will they have enough time to present another? Or will, by default, President Biden then become the president? Because we, of course, are a two-party majority. So this is going to be interesting to watch over the next couple of weeks for us to kind of get an idea, months, as we get ready to get into fall and things heat up with all those that are running on the federal ticket. As we begin to close, could you just share your experience in voting and why it's important to you? I hear this all the time. My vote don't mean nothing. It don't count. And I'm not wasting my time. And I said, well, you don't even have to get up and go to the polls anymore. They can mail you the ballot. You can sit there and take as long time as you want. Do your research. Make your choices and just return it by mail, which I don't agree with because it's terrible in Philly. But going to a nearby space and dropping it off at any of the polls or mailboxes that are secured for that purpose. What can you say to those that are listening from a Black man who has, as you said, seen education from both sides? And I hope you'll be able to come back and we'll have another conversation about the education system here in Philly. But seeing it from both sides, both worlds, why the importance of that is necessary.
Yeah, absolutely. So here's what I would say. Number one, and I'm going to say it jokingly, but not, I don't want to be the one vote that doesn't get it done, right? So that's the first part, right? That you don't want to be that person. But the other part too is that we all have to do it, right? So if I'm standing out here and I'm saying, hey, you have to do it, I have to do it myself. And with that being said, it's important because just one person can't do it. Mm-hmm. And so, right, I have to do it, and then I have to bring the next person along. The next person has to bring the next person along. And we have to do it collectively. So it's really about the groundswell of individuals all voting and the importance of that. And the reality is that, going back, we're talking about the presidential race, but there's some very important races that we don't even talk about, particularly with when we talk about judges.
Yes.
When we start talking about state reps, council, right? Like, there's some important races where you actually have a greater impact on those than you actually have on, say, a presidential race. So that it's important to vote, not only in the presidential election, but every single election that happens. So that's, you know, my two cents on it.
Absolutely. And I always tell people, start at home. Even the Bible says, first in Jerusalem, then Judea, then Samaria, then the othermost parts. So for those of you that know that verse in Acts, you should know, start in Jerusalem. And Jerusalem is knowing your local elected officials, who they are, what they do, why they do, holding them accountable, listening to the, you know, of course, city councils on session, but either tuning in or showing up just to see your tax dollars at work. And then Judea will go into the state, and then, you know, Samaria will be the federal government, and then we can worry about the rest of the world. And I'm hoping that we will get wiser in this time of preparation for the presidential, and that we'll ask the key questions, but we will also hold to feed the fire for those of us that are going to be governing us here in the city of Philadelphia, and watching very closely that we don't become a part of the disenfranchisement even yet again. As we close, could you share your favorite quote that gets you up in the morning, empowers you, encourages you when you feel like, ugh? And that could be any way that it is for you. And certainly we want to hear that.
Yeah. So one of my favorites, I have a couple of them. One of my favorites is from Ayn Rand, which is stated, a man builds his world in his own image. He has the power to choose, but no power to escape the necessity of choice. Wow. And so in every single thing, we have a choice to make in everything that we do. So that's one of the most powerful. And then the other one is for Marion Williamson, A Return to Love. I won't cite the whole one, but it's our deepest fear, right? It's not that we're inadequate, but powerful beyond measure. And so, and we have to step into that power and start leading with that power. And I appreciate being here. I didn't say this at the beginning, but the song Can't Stop Now is very appropriate for this morning. I will share with you, I've been up since 7 o'clock yesterday morning. No. 6 o'clock yesterday morning. You didn't notice I'm in the background. This is the airport. I just landed to take this, need to take this from traveling to get back here. So when we talk about can't stop now, that's where I am. And so I stopped in the airport at one of the gates. I'm running out. I appreciate being here. Thank you for allowing me. But I just wanted to tell you how appropriate that song was for this morning, because we can't stop and we have to keep going.
Absolutely. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we are so grateful for Mr. Atif Bostic joining us this morning. He is the president and CEO of Uplift Solutions. If you have any questions, people can reach you at?
You can reach me at atif.bostic@upliftsolutions.org.
All right. Easy. You can send him an email or locate the number, and I'm sure that they'll get it to him in any way, shape, or form. He's approachable, and we're certainly looking forward to the website.
There's some numbers.
Yeah. Yes, and we're looking forward to when you come back. We can talk about education and then your grand opening. And we thank you so much for your time. Now,
Absolutely. You
go and take care of yourself, baby. You go home, catch some Z's.
Thank
Amen.
You.
Work from home works today. If that.
That's right. But unfortunately, I have other stuff. We got to get some stuff done. So we'll get it done.
Thank you so much for taking your time. And until next week, remember what the bishop says. If you can't be good, be careful, baby. And if you can't be careful, don't do it. It may not be worth it. Take care of yourself. Be blessed. And join us next week.
Thanks for tuning in to another dynamic show with Bishop Mary. To contact Bishop Mary, call 833-722-4748. That's 833-722-4748. And she'll get right back to you. Remember, let the healing begin with you. See you next week for another great time together on the Bishop Mary Show.